Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today, the latest information on health and healing. We're going to look at mushrooms and what they're good for. How much does the average person consume in sugar, more than what's actually recommended? Psychiatrist and prostitutes. 5, sad similarities. Also, 5 amazing properties of sunlight you never heard about. We have a lot to share. Then I'm going to do a lot on the environment. I'll talk about the latest on the East Coast cities. Vast amounts of wastewater from fracking are out there, and no one seems to be that concerned about it within the movement, meaning the fracking, pro-fracking movement. All over South America, their high mountain ranges, like the Andes, are losing their water. Not a good thing, because they're not going to get it back. And then an issue. The issue is, well, 2. One, if time permits, is about something that came from the 1950s to the 70s, COINTELPRO. Tom McNamara of Counterpunch talks about it's back. The FBI didn't stop it. It's been going on. It infiltrated the Occupy movement. Was that legal? Of course not. But have they ever been tried and convicted, including against all the crimes that they were found guilty of under the church hearings? No. Double standard. One other thing. When we talk about, I didn't have a chance to get into this the other day. I want to today if time permits. How Goldman Sachs made $400 million betting food prices would go up. In the process, hundreds of millions are starving. Why can't the major media ever confront the people who work there? All the people who work there. Because they're all profiting from almost 1 billion people starving, many of them to death. What kind of society are we when the average bonus package is $396,500, almost $400,000, and they're all happy about that, but they made their money in such a contemptibly vile and immoral way? But that's Wall Street. That's the banking community. And that's business as normal. And all their friends in Washington, from the president, well, all of Washington, because they control almost all of Washington. And they certainly control the media. You never hear hard-hitting questions, ever. We'll deal with that. As you see, we have a lot to share. But this is TalkBack. Starting in about 5 minutes, the phones are open for you to call in and share your insights, questions, thoughts, comments on any topic that is relevant to this program. Our TalkBack number is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Let's begin. There are hundreds of varieties of mushrooms. Most Americans don't eat mushrooms except little white cap mushrooms. Well, they should be eaten. And by the way, don't eat them raw. And for all the raw foodists, you have made raw food into a cult. And unfortunately, you are following the same patterns that the Macrobiotics did, where they didn't believe in vitamins, and they believed in the yin and yang nonsense. And the head of the Macrobiotics smoked, and as did members of his family. Many died. A lot of people thought it was all right to smoke because they did. I confronted him one-on-one, right? And then his family at the Fontainebleau Hotel down in Miami Beach when they invited me to be their keynote speaker because they had such poor attendance. I just asked him, why do you smoke? Because there are things about macrobiotics that make sense and are certainly good. And he tried to explain that it was the yin and the yang and yin-yang nonsense. In any case, what's happening today to a lot of people who are so much into raw foods, And a few of the people were profiting mightily in their reputation, and one guy in particular who's really obnoxious and is very aggressive. But in America today, those who are most aggressive and most over the top and most exaggerating are likely to get the most attention. If you're eating raw mushrooms, then show me the biochemistry test that you're getting the nutrients. If you cook the mushrooms, you heat them, then the nutrients are bioavailable. Same thing with tomatoes. The lycopene is expressed and most bioavailable when it's been heated, not when it's raw. A lot of things simply are poorly digested, very low nutrient intake when they're raw. Broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, asparagus, best to steam them. But you kill all the enzymes. No, you don't. You actually liberate the enzymes. That would be like eating brown rice raw or eating a garbanzo bean raw. It's when you heat it, and through the hydrolyzation process of heat and water, you open up the very tough and frequently non-absorbable or the nutrient-less outer fiber, exposing the very nutrient-rich inner protein in the amino acids, in the endosperm, in the oils. So anyhow, on this issue of mushrooms, it's always best to lightly cook your mushrooms. You're getting a great deal of nutritional value then. Here's the latest on why we should be having our mushrooms, and this comes from Himanshu Pradesh University. Mushrooms are good for diabetes, and they contain very little sugar. Quote, cultivated and wild species of mushrooms are consumed because of their nutritional value. They are rich in essential nutritional constituents and are good for people with diabetes. And they did this major study on them and found, quote, also, all the mushrooms investigated so far have been found to have curative properties against cancer and other diseases. Well, that's because mushrooms stimulate the immune system in a big way. Shiitake, maitake, reishi, all of them are good. We eat a lot of sugar. I once had a chance at the beginning of my career to interview three of the leading health advocates in Europe. Dr. John Cleave, who was retired living out in the country, who was the one who found what he called the saccharine principle, that when he was on the ship in the Navy in the Second World War, soldiers had all forms of problems, constipation, breaking out on their backs and face, pimples, and they had a lot of problems because they weren't getting fresh fruits and vegetables. And a lot of the food they ate was canned, and they had a lot of sugar. But this changed, and every time they went into port and got fresh produce. So he looked carefully at this whole idea of what sugars do in the body and found out that they're very destructive. And he wrote about it. Then Dr. John Yutkin, who held a chair in nutrition at the University of London, picked up on it, and he went further, and he said we have to have quality fiber, and we have to have low sugar, ideally no refined sugars, if we wanted to help prevent a lot of disease and help us overcome a lot of conditions. He was highly respected. And then there was a Dr. Dennis Burkitt. He's the one who discovered Burkitt's lymphoma. He worked at 67 different hospitals in East Africa where he made the rounds, and he said he never saw a case of appendicitis, colorectal cancer. It was just so rare when someone had a heart attack that everybody paid attention because normally you didn't die of those. And he's the one who also found that it was roughage that we need, meaning they in Africa they eat the whole millet or the whole maize, they eat the whole grain, and also lots of nuts and seeds. That was translated into fiber, but the way they gave us our fiber was very refined. And as a result, his original work, roughage, was lost, and it was replaced by fiber. At that time, I looked at the surveys that were available, and the average person living in Connecticut consumed 5 grams of fiber a day. fiber was not considered an essential nutrient. In fact, in a classic debate where I was debating one of the top people at the AMA in Chicago on ABC Network, he said fiber's good for, quote, pigs and cows, as if humans didn't need it. Well, he was wrong. But they had no problem you having sugar, all the sugar you wanted. This is from the Natural Society. Here is the latest on this. The average person in the United States consumes 300% more sugar every day than is recommended. Now, that's important to realize. We get a lot of high fructose corn syrup, and we get a lot of white granulated sucrose, and that's all causing everything from diabetes and cancer and bad breath and bacterial overgrowth, and so it's just bad. So indeed, sugar is being consumed this way. The average person consumes approximately 4 pounds of sugar each year in 1700. 18 pounds in 1800. 90 pounds in 1900. And then it jumps. Today, 180 pounds every year. That's 227 grams. That's half a pound of sugar per day. So when you look at that and you realize 70 grams of that is from fructose, you're way beyond anything that could be justified on any basis. So the more sugar we eat, generally the less fiber we have, and then that slows down the intestines, and when you have a slow intestine, you're more susceptible to putrefaction and morbid material in the intestine, and that can lead to itises, and that can lead to inflammation, and that can lead to colorectal cancer. So get off the sugar. If you want something sweet, raw, unheated honey, that's okay. Stevia is good. Five amazing properties from the sun that you never heard about. First off, according to Sayer G. in Green MedInfo, sunlight is great at killing pain. It's a natural analgesic. There was a study published in Psychosomatic Medicine entitled The Effects of Sunlight on Postoperative Analgesic Medication Use, a prospective study of patients undergoing spinal surgery. And what they found was that patients staying on the bright side of the hospital unit were exposed to 46% higher intensity of sunlight on average. The patients exposed to an increased intensity of sunlight experienced less perceived stress, and it acted like a painkiller. They required 21% less pain medication. Also, new information, sunlight burns fat. According to the Journal of Investigative Dermatology, it impacts our metabolism. The exposure of human skin to ultraviolet light results in increased subcutaneous fat metabolism. And while subcutaneous fat, unlike visceral fat, is not considered a risk factor for cardiovascular disease, it is known that a deficiency of sunlight, and hence vitamin D, is a risk to our overall health. Also, sunlight via solar cycles may directly regulate human lifespan. There is an article published in the Medical Hypothesis entitled The Effects of Solar Cycles on Human Lifespan in the 50 United States, Variation in Light Effects in Human Genome. And what they did was this. The researchers reviewed the idea that the solar cycles directly affect the human genome. According to the researchers, quote, in the current study, we report that those persons conceived and likely born during the peaks, maximum approximately 3 years of approximately 11-year solar cycles, lived an average of 1.7 years less than those conceived and likely born during non-peak. Increased energy at the solar max, albeit relatively small, 0.1%, apparently modifies the human genome, epigenome, and engenders changes that predispose to various diseases, thereby shortening lifespan. So That's interesting, because they're saying that sunlight directly affects the length of our life and may even accelerate genetic changes that may confer a survival advantage. Also, daytime sunlight exposure improves evening alertness. A study published this past year in Behavioral Neuroscience entitled Effects of Prior Light Exposure on Early Evening Performance, Subjective Sleepiness, and Hormone Secretion found that the subjects felt significantly more alert at the beginning of the evening after being exposed to 6 hours of mainly daylight exposure, whereas they became sleepier at the end of the evening after artificial light exposure. And finally, sunlight may convert to metabolic energy. There was a novel hypothesis published in the Journal of Alternative Complementary Medicine talking about the long-standing assumption that animals are incapable of utilizing light energy directly is now called into question. In other words, our skin may contain the equivalent of melanin or solar panels, and it may be possible to ingest energy, as plants do, directly from the sun. It's a hypothesis. Now, melanin has a diverse set of roles in various organisms, from the ink of the octopus to the melanin-based protective colorings of bacteria and fungi. It offers protection against a variety of threats from predators and similar biochemical threats. And ultraviolet light and other chemical stressors, like heavy metals and oxidizing agents. And commonly overlooked, however, is melanin's ability to convert gamma and ultraviolet radiation into metabolic energy within living systems. The single-cell fungi, for instance, have been observed thriving with the collapsed nuclear reactor at Chernobyl in Ukraine using gamma radiation as a source of energy. Albino fungi without melanin were studied to be incapable of using gamma radiation in this way, proving that gamma rays initiate a yet unknown process of energy production within exposed melanin. Now, vertebrate animals may also convert light directly into metabolic energy based upon that hypothesis. Interesting thing, way of looking at it. So just ask yourself, when you're out in the sun, do you feel more energy? Do you feel better? And when people have been in bed and not had direct sunlight, what's the experience when they do get out and they get into the air and they're into the sunlight? Do you think it's just the change of scenery when you go to the Caribbean islands and we're out into the desert when you're getting all that sunlight? So there may be some basis and truth to that. In any case, most people feel a lot better when they're out in the sun. Psychiatrists and prostitutes, they have some similarities. According to Mike Bundran of Natural News, one, prostitutes are controlled by human trafficking cartels. He says, quote, psychiatrists are controlled by drug trafficking cartels. Okay. And if you think psychiatrists are free to practice how they please, think again. For one, when your entire tool bag consists of drugs manufactured by pharmaceutical giants, who then is in control? Number two, he says, people who don't want to bother with real relationships frequent prostitutes. People who don't want to bother with real problems solving go to psychiatrist. Emotional problems have real solutions that involve therapeutic intervention and effort and personal growth. My hat is off to anyone traveling this path. Millions of people, however, are not interested in doing the deep inner work required to let go of emotional pain, whether it's a spiritual path or self-empowering path. And then those people who don't want to do that are frequently perfect candidates for psychiatry, because psychiatrists do not require people to learn and grow. Check in, get your meds, check out. Come back when you need another quickie. Number three, people get counterfeit love from prostitutes. People get counterfeit solutions from psychiatrists. Speaking of the whores of 7th Avenue, Paul Simon wrote in the song The Boxer, I do declare there were times when I was so lonesome I took some comfort there. Well, lonely and emotionally desperate people might seek comfort with a prostitute but never find it. The prostitute has no real comfort or companionship to offer for these people. It's a business. The counterfeit love you find with a prostitute is no different than the counterfeit solution your psychiatrist has to offer. Meds are not solutions to problems, but a way to avoid these problems and their solutions. When you go to a prostitute seeking love, you actually end up further away from love. When you go to a psychiatrist seeking to solve a problem, you end up further away from real solutions. Number four, prostitutes have rules of engagement. Psychiatrists have professional boundaries. Prostitutes have their rules, like things you can't do. Kissing on the mouth is off limits, as they consider it too personal. There may be other rules as well to keep the relationship in a proper context as a business arrangement. Psychiatrists have similar rules. For example, you can't ask them what meds they're on and how their marriage is going, or what they're struggling with in their own personal life. The professional boundaries make it all but impossible to know anything about them. For all you know, your psychiatrist could be a psychopath. You'd never know. Number five, prostitutes pretend they want to have sex with you. And psychiatrists pretend they understand you. And that's it. I'm Gary Knoll. Back in a moment. Time for your calls. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. You're listening to Talk Back, one day a week, where no guest, just your opportunity to call in. Let's hear from you now. Barbara from Florida. Hi, Barbara.
I have a question for you. I have many questions, in fact. It was hard to choose just one. But I would like to start with asking you what you think about xylitol as an occasional sweetener.
Xylitol is a very good natural sweetener, and it's made from the birch bark. It has very low calories. It has been shown to help maintain a healthy balance of bacteria in the mouth. It's actually used in some natural gums to help with teeth and gum health. So it's fine. Don't take a lot of it because you could end up with an overstimulated digestive system. But otherwise, xylitol is fine.
Not a problem. Okay. That's good to know.
Mm-hmm. All the best to you, Barbara.
All right. Thank you very much.
Bye. I'll intersperse a few things on the environment. This is from crisisboom.com. It says, scientists predicting East Coast cities are sitting ducks for storms. Cities on the United States East Coast are in trouble for the next big storm because of the destruction wrought by Hurricane Sandy. One of Barack Obama's top scientists warned this week. Marcia McNutt, who last week announced her resignation as director of the U.S. Geological Survey, told a conference that Sandy had left coastal communities dangerously exposed to future storms of any size. Here's what she said. This was, Superstorm Sandy was a threshold for the Northeast, and we have already crossed it. She told the National Council for Science and Environmental Conference in Washington, for the next storm, not even a superstorm, even a run-of-the-mill northeasterner, the amount of breaches and the amount of coastal flooding will be widespread. Now, she is a professor of marine geophysics And she was careful to preface her public remarks that she was speaking as a scientist, not as an Obama administration official. But it was an extremely stark warning. Quote, "Before Sandy, someone asked me what my climate change nightmare was. Before Sandy, I said it was that with the extra energy of the atmospheric ocean system, it feeds superstorms that intersect megacities left rendered helpless by rising seas. And that is where we are now. Half of America's population live within 50 miles of a coast, and those numbers are growing. However, scientists and urban planners have warned repeatedly those coastal communities, as well as important infrastructure, are increasingly vulnerable." So, here are my thoughts on this. We're going to have many superstorms in the near future, probably starting in the next 12 months. Because the oceans are rising and the water is warming and the glaciers in Antarctica and in Greenland, the Himalayas and other places are melting at such a rapid rate that there's not even an accurate mathematical model to predict how quickly it could surge up. The old model, don't worry, you'll be long dead before the oceans rise enough to be a problem. All those are gone. Right now, we are in chaos, meaning there is no way of predicting when a big chunk of glacier will come off of Greenland. But it could be at any time, and it's inevitable that that's going to happen. I wished everyone in this audience could watch the outstanding documentary I saw recently at Lincoln Center called Chasing Ice. If you can watch it up on Netflix or download it, do so. Because it was a story about what's happening to glaciers and how they're receding and how he took cameras and put them with the sponsorship of National Geographic all around these major areas in Alaska and Greenland and Iceland. And then he did this over a period of about 5 or 6 years, and each year there was a greater loss of the glaciers. And then you saw the largest calving ever recorded in history. You know when you see a part of the ice break off and go into the ocean? That's called calving. And sometimes it's as big as a house. Well, this was nearly the size of Manhattan, at least half of Manhattan. It was huge. It was miles long. And it just all broke and turned upside down. And they had cameras that caught it all. No one would ever have thought that was possible. But it not only was possible, it happened. So two things are absolutely, positively, unequivocally going to happen. The oceans are increasing, and they'll increase higher and get warmer than anyone could possibly imagine, and faster. When that happens, the number and the degree of strength of the tropical storms will be more than what we've ever seen in our country's history. I wouldn't be surprised if we have a couple Category 5s hit through the Gulf Coast and hit the East Coast. We have no preparation for that. And so people who are rebuilding on the ocean, it's a big mistake. People are looking to, you know, their condos, and big mistake. Because you're going to see, you're going to get hit. No different than the people living on a major earthquake fault that it's time in that cycle for that to happen. There will be major earthquakes in certain areas. And California from Alaska down to Bayou, it's all going to happen. And soon. It's no different than if you have thousands of gas hydrofracking wells in Montana, which you do, and in Wyoming, which you do, and in Pennsylvania on the Marcellus Shale, which you do. It's not, are these going to be problematic and pollute your water? It's just, to what degree? But as long as people can deny any of this, because the consequences of facing it means you would actually have to plan something. And instead of looking at people that plan ahead in a prudent and responsible way, we look at them in a mocking way, in a condescending way. Even today's New York Times showed the preppers, you know, the people who are prepping, as if, gee whiz, aren't these people strange? No, they're not. Or maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you should go talk with the people who didn't prepare for Katrina. And we're told that the Corps of Engineers was certain that the levees wouldn't be breached. Or maybe you should go talk with the 3 million people in New York and New Jersey who were adversely affected by Sandy, and the thousands who are living in hotels and motels because they lost their homes. What if they had prepared? What about all the people who had the money to live up in the woods area of Arizona and New Mexico and Montana, and their homes got burned down because the forest dried up and the beetles took over and made everything kindling? Then record hot days, in comes the fire, and away goes your home. But what if they had prepared? How could you prepare for a fire? Simple. You simply run water sprinkler systems over your entire house, and you cut away the foliage within a reasonable period distance from the house, let's say 50 yards, and then you have backup foaming agents, which when you put on a house will prevent the house from burning down. And then you have backup emergency well with a large, let's say 6 or 8 ounce pipe, making you have the same capacity as a fire engine. Not so difficult. You could even put it on a timer with a thermometer. If there's any fire, it automatically turns on and you save your house. How many people you think have done that? Not expensive, easy to do, but we'd rather live in denial that any of this is happening than to prepare for it. But there are people preparing. Next up, vast amounts of wastewater as fracking expands. This is from Tim Lucas, Duke University. Quote, the amount of wastewater from natural gas production in the Marcellus Shale region has increased by 570% since 2004 as a result of increased shale gas production there. The scale of fracking operations in the region is so vast that the wastewater it produces threatens to overwhelm the region's disposal capacity, according to a new analysis by researchers at Duke and Kent State Universities. Well, what this means in lay language is that there's 10 times or 1,000% more wastewater been used than in conventional wells. And as a result, where's that wastewater supposed to go? It's got known carcinogens in it. It can easily go into your aquifer, into your water source. So it's not, are we going to end up with massive water pollution and soil pollution because of these chemicals? It's just, at what point will the state finally honor the people in the state, the farmers and the people who are exposed, rather than the donors who give them the money from the gas industry? And finally, from the environmental movement, this is from Common Dreams, from John Quealy, staff writer. Quote, melting glaciers in the Andes could spell continental water crisis in South America. Climate change is driving unprecedented shrinking of crucial resources. The great glaciers of South America are disappearing at rates never seen in modern times, and the continent's freshwater supply is at serious risk if the trend continues, says a new study. Driven by global climate change, the report published in the academic journal Cryosphere shows that the Andean glaciers have shrunk up to 50% since the 1970s. Glacier retreat in the tropical Andes over the last three decades is unprecedented, according to Antonio Revitel, the lead author of the study at the Laboratory of Glaciology and Environmental Geophysics in France. Because the maximum thickness of these small, low-altitude glaciers rarely exceeds 40 meters, with such an annual loss, they will probably completely disappear in the near future. If that happens, warn scientists, millions of people who depend on the glaciers to feed mountain streams and replenish water reserves would be at a catastrophic risk. It is added, quote, retreating glaciers aren't just a visible indication of climate change. There are practical consequences, too. Another author of the study says the Andean glaciers are an important source of fresh water for nearby populations. Glaciers provide 15% of the La Paz water supply throughout the year, increasing to 27% during the dry season. And what are those people supposed to drink when the mountain glaciers are not giving them the water for agriculture, for hydropower? So water shortages become more problematic for local communities if the ice melt doesn't stop soon. Quote, successive studies show that glaciers are melting in response to climate change. And so if you've gone to South America and you go into the areas that are fed by these glaciers melting, you realize how intimate, how close, how interconnected the two are. And yet, when was the last time you heard anyone in the United States, in our government, say, yes, we should do something? What you have is you have false promises. You have proclamations. But behind all of that is ALEC, the Business Roundtable, the powerful groups that says, okay, make promises, people forget, and then, but don't cause any industrial shift to clean up the air and water. So they're going to be having a lot of problems in South America. And finally, on Goldman Sachs. This is from Jacob Chamberlain, staff writer, Four Common Dreams. Goldman Sachs food speculation turns global hunger into Wall Street profit. Financial giant makes $400 million as high-risk commodity trading pushes already fragile food system to the breaking point. As the world's most vulnerable populations succumb to surging global food prices, driven in part by drought, climate change, and a global food system increasingly vulnerable to the whims of commodity speculation, Goldman Sachs has managed to turn the poverty and suffering of others into profit for itself, pulling in more than $400 million in profits last year through risky and damaging food speculation practices. The Wall Street financial titan has once again profited from others' misfortune. The Independent, which, by the way, is a leading British newspaper, reports, according to an analysis conducted for the Independent by the World Development Movement, the 2012 investment practices, quote, in soft commodities, wheat and maize, by financial institutions such as Goldman Sachs drove prices to unprecedented highs while bank profits increased and bank bonuses were handed out readily. While nearly a billion people go hungry, Goldman Sachs bankers are feeding their own bonuses by betting on the price of food. Financial speculation is fueling food price spikes, and Goldman Sachs is number one culprit. End quote. So, here's what it means. That we're allowing the privatization of water, and we're allowing speculation in all things. Nothing is sacred. Nothing is off limits. So those who create money or have unlimited capacity to borrow any amount they want are controlling everything. And they have a whole culture based upon greed. It's not just Goldman Sachs and all of their employees. It's Bank America. It's Citigroup. It's the Federal Reserve. It's the Treasury Department. It's the White House. It's all of Washington. It's all the lobbyists. It's most of the major corporate 500. It's Google, it's Bill Gates. So who's going to be the person who says enough? We have enough. We have our yachts and planes and three houses and mansions and villas and mistresses and surgically enhanced wives. Do they have any other? We have all this. Surely we have enough. Can't we just leave something for the people? And the answer is no. Why should we? We don't have to. We can take it all. And if a billion people die, do you think the New York Times will report on it? Do you think anyone will accuse us of anything? Do you think anyone will do anything? They can't. We control them. We bought them. They're ours. Your thoughts, 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. I'm Gary Nall. Let's go over and say hello to another one of our listeners standing by, Pam from New Jersey. Hi, Pam.
Hi. How do you get rid of red swollen infected gums?
Well, there's two ways of looking at this. One is you ask, what is the most likely cause of the swelling? And then you stop that. But if it's something that has been going on for a period of time, like a lowered immune system, then it may not be something you're doing today. It may be something that you have been doing over a period of time. And then based upon your age and your state of health, if you're a woman, if you're in your 40s or 50s, if you're not athletic, if you have other problems in the body, local infections, maybe in the joints or the leg, then the body has to have more immune modulators than there is available. And so wherever you're most vulnerable, that's where you end up with your worst pain and your worst inflammation. For a lot of people, it's in the mouth. So for me, gum inflammation and swelling gums and gingivitis or periodontal conditions is generally a condition not just of a poor oral hygiene. Even if a person brushes religiously and flosses and water picks, it's due to something more systemic. It is that their whole immune system is shifting. Hormones shift, and they shift down. Metabolism shifts down. Energy levels, mitochondrial output shifts down. And then you're more susceptible to bacterial and viral replication that would normally be coexisting, but under check, candida begins to proliferate. So in that case, you have to go on a very severe detoxification protocol. Rebuilding positive cultures is good, but lots of juices and lots of green juices spike with garlic and ginger, cayenne, and lots of vitamin C and quercetin. Probably 10 to 12 glasses of juice a day. Healing broths, healing seaweed soups, and have a lot of salads. Cabbage juice is very good. But nothing's going to help as much as vitamin D and quercetin, and then spraying the gums with some colloidal silver. That's some of the things I would suggest. Good luck to you. Now let's say hello to another listener. We have a lot of listeners on right now. Let's see who we have here. Bob from New York. Hi, Bob. Your turn.
Hey, Gary. A very quick question. Does green stuff need to be refrigerated, or can it be left out?
Does not have to be refrigerated.
Okay. Is there any problem if I do refrigerate it?
No. No.
Okay, great.
Green stuff is dehydrated at room temperature, hence it's a raw food, and it can stay for a long time, years, at full potency, and just keep it out of extreme temperatures and extreme humidity. All right? All the best to you. Let's say hello to Luann Panessi, who's on now. She's a holistic nurse, and Luann answers the mail for those who try to reach me. I'm out on the road filming now and trying to finish up an important documentary to premiere in the next 3 months in New York and around the country. And so I'm on the road. And so I don't, please don't send me personal emails because I'm not reading any personal emails now. But you can send them to Luann. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. And if people want to send me emails, they can send me it at whnn@aol.com. William Harry Nancy Nancy. whnn@aol.com. And
wait,
I do
before you get started, mm-hmm. A lot of people are listening over the telephone. And we have a new telephone number that is better. we had so many people using it, tens of thousands of people with millions of minutes have been listening, because it frees you from having to be in front of a radio or in front of a computer. You can be anywhere. At any time, you pick up the phone, you dial a number, put on speaker, put in a headset, and you can listen to the show, which is a good thing for a lot of people. And the old number, we'd reached the max, and it wasn't the best quality. This new number is much better quality. It is 619-550-0869. Okay? 619-550-0869. Now, Luann, over to you.
Okay, I have an email here from Howard from Los Angeles. And he says, my father spoke to me over the weekend about how he met you at an airport last week. You were both waiting for the same flight. He said he watched you for almost an hour writing longhand on a notepad. And although he hesitated at first, he did come over and introduce himself and told you that he listens to your program on a regular basis. He was absolutely surprised when you warmly and graciously invited him to sit down, and you engage in a conversation that lasted well over an hour, in fact, almost till boarding time. And he said, my dad said that after 30 years in the financial management industry, he actually learned something new in the conversation with you. And it gave him a radically new perspective. And that is what the gross domestic product actually means and how we have eight separate economies. And each one must be understood in its own context. And we should not consider that we have only one economy. So I wonder if you wanted to comment on that.
Sure. We have been led to believe that everything that would help us is too complicated for the average person to understand. Therefore, everything has to be understood through the eyes and minds of experts, whether it's medical or social or educational. It's always an expert that tells us. And then when we see the experts lining up to come on television to tell us about why we have to invade Iraq, or why it was a good thing to get rid of Gaddafi. And no one ever goes back later and says, you know, you told us that they had weapons of mass destruction, a whole group of you. You were absolutely certain. You were generals and admirals and lieutenant colonels, and you were there to help America. But you were wrong. As a result, over a million and a half Iraqi civilians are dead. A country's been destroyed. In some places, they don't have more than a couple hours of electricity each day. There's major sectarian conflict. There have been major purges with whole communities wiped out. Billions of dollars stolen. $5 trillion in debt. And yet you're back again as if you didn't make all those errors. And then you shift over and say, and you told us that we had to have a war on drugs. And so we've had a 40-year war on drugs. And we have more people incarcerated than any other nation in the world, more than China, more than Russia. And we have more people in jail for long periods of time for marijuana use. And we have to pay for that. And we're paying private corporations that make enormous profits as long as we continue to be harsh in our sentencing without compassion. And you told us we'd win the war if we just did more. And we've spent over $1 trillion. We have nothing to show for it. Nothing. Zero. We're right back where we started. As if it didn't count. 65,000 to 70,000 people dead in just Mexico, just with Calderon, the last president before the new one sworn in. And it's worse than ever. All of South America now is a narco-terrorist state. All of it. I have friends that lived in Panama, I have friends that lived in Uruguay, and friends that lived in Argentina that had to leave because the narco-terrorists are now going into expats' estates and telling them, we're going to buy your place here for $20,000. And someone says, what, are you kidding? I have $500,000. Well, I'll give you a choice. I'll give you lead or I'll give you silver. Here's silver, here's your cash, you give us the deed, or here's the bullets, that's your lead. and you think this can happen, I'll go to the police. Well, we own the police. Well, I'll go to the government. We own the government. Much like in America. And so that's our war on drugs and war on poverty. Now, there's a war, boy, that we've done well with. Oh, but then we didn't. We have more people poor today than at any time per population in American history, including the Great Depression. More. We have more people, but in the Great Depression, you didn't have 18 million hungry children. You didn't have 100 million people living at poverty level. Today we do. You don't have 274 million people out of a country of 313 million people who don't have any savings, can only last 1 week without a job or a paycheck, are working at some $7.40, whatever it is, at minimum wage, that nobody can survive on. And yet all because corporations says as much profit as we made, we're holding on to $2 trillion in cash, we want to make even more. So if we can't outsource the jobs and break the unions, we want to make sure that you're indentured. You work for us. And we're going to make it real easy to get a payday loan. And we're going to make it easy for you to buy a car. We're going to make it easy for you to buy a house. We're going to make it easy for you to go to the mall and buy that big screen TV. And we're going to give you back 1%. We'll emphasize we're giving you back 1%. I get money back. You've seen the ads. Yes, they'll give you back 1%, but then you pay them 19%. Well, when you look at it that way, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. You give me one penny, I give you 19 pennies? Yes. What if I'm late? Well, then it's compounded, and then there's penalties. It could go up to 100%, or with debit cards, 500%. And hence, students today who can't afford to pay back their loans, your loan will double. Oh, $60,000, $100,000, it'll be $120,000 or $200,000. Well, that doesn't make any sense. If I can't pay back my loan now, how am I supposed to pay it back if I'm not working? Well, not to worry. If you can't pay back a student loan and you have compounding interest, in will come a private company and we'll take over the debt and put you in jail. There's now debtors' prisons in 27 states. And every day that you're in a debtor's prison because you couldn't pay a bill, you're charged a compounding interest. How did that happen? Well, that's just one of those things that you weren't paying attention to when the experts said, we know best, and they're the ones who passed the laws, and they had all those lobbyists. And most of the people you see on television are nothing more than lobbyists, whether they're medical doctor lobbyists or scientific lobbyists or political lobbyists or journalist lobbyists. And that's why more and more people today are so fed up with everything and everyone that's in an official position. And they're looking for alternatives. And there are a lot of alternative sites and information who are sharing with them. A lot of people are getting off the grid. And so when I had a chance to talk with this man, and I said, just be aware, you talk about one economy, I talk about eight. Are you going to tell me that a man making $1 million a year is going to live the same life and have the same investment strategy and have the same assets as a person who's making $30,000? No. Well, that man at $30,000 has to live within an economy. He has to have food stamps. He has to have Medicare or Medicaid. He has to have some kind of public support. And his economy is different than yours. Are you ever going to pay any interest on a credit card? Are you going to be rich enough that you can pay the bill immediately when it comes in? It's just a convenience to buy stuff. But another economy won't. And what about if you're a professional class and you used to make $250 an hour as an architect or as a CPA or as a lawyer? And now you're going to make $40 an hour or $50. That's a different economy. But you built up a lot of debt and now you're paying it off or downsizing. And what if you're a working class or a poor working class? Each one of these, and what if you're a senior citizen on a fixed income? That's an economy. If you have to live off Social Security and nothing else, and you have to pay rent or mortgage, utilities, food, medicine, transportation, it's not going to be covered by Social Security. So you're going to live perpetually in debt. And you're going to have to sell what you have. That's a different economy. So when you think that we all have one economy, that's a myth. There are at least 8 different economies. And 6 of those 8 are going over a cliff. And we're in for a big problem. But for 2, they're doing fine and they're going to do even better. I'm Gary Noll. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for listening. And you can always go to the archives to download any of the programs that you might have missed, including the always popular Progressive Commentary Hour.